Now let's begin.
Listener, and welcome to Trek 1701, a Star Trek podcast. I'm your host. My name is Chris Lockhart, and we don't have our full panel this evening. Unfortunately, Ragnar could not be with us, but tonight we have Richard. How's it going, Richard?
Doing all right. Gonna miss Ragnar, but we'll muddle through somehow.
Yeah. And last but not least, we have Curtis. How's it going, Curtis?
Mostly fine, but I spilled my beer like right before you called me, so.
I see.
Off to a rocky start, but it's going to get better. This is going to be a great discussion tonight.
Yeah. Typically, you know, with Trek 1701, we are a Star Trek podcast, but occasionally we will discuss other stuff that may be space or space entertainment related. For tonight, we are actually... our episode is called The Great Space Questions Discussion. So the other day, I can't remember who the guest was. I was watching Joe Rogan on YouTube, and he had, I can't remember the name of the scientist, but he had this, you know, this guy, and they were talking about, you know, all these space questions and stuff. And it really got me thinking, like, I know I've done this episode at one point over the last 10 years, but... this is the first time we're doing it on Trek 1701. So we're going to talk about some big questions we have in regards to space and the universe and all that kind of stuff. And I'm sure we will be... I know myself, I will be referencing Star Trek from time to time. So, without further ado, let's get into talking about... our great space questions. The first one I have up is, and we'll go around the table to answer this question, are we alone in the universe? And by that, I mean us as the human race, us on Earth. And not just the human race, I guess like animals and plant life and so on and so forth. Life. Is life on Earth, are we the only life out there? Are we alone in the universe? Richard, I'll start off with you. What are your thoughts on this? Are we alone in the universe?
Well, I'm going to sort of like define how I see the question. So,
okay.
If we're talking about intelligent life, I think that the most plausible guess for that right now is that either there was intelligent life a very long time ago, and now we're kind of like in the middle of, you know, sort of a break of, you know, maybe an intelligent race that ended, and there will be more in the future. Or we're simply the first of the intelligent life in our galaxy. I have no idea about like outside of our galaxy. My thoughts usually in this pertain to our galaxy. And yeah, I don't think that there's any other intelligent life at the moment. I think that there's absolutely life in smaller forms, potentially like, you know, different types of animals, or we already know that there's like microbial life, but intelligent life, spacefaring life, you know, bipedal or, you know, something similar to humans, mm-hmm. I don't believe so. And I'd be happy to be proved wrong. Absolutely, but at this point in time, I haven't seen enough evidence, and I know there's enough people out there that would, you know, yell in my face, you know, saying that there absolutely are aliens and they visited us very recently. But from my perspective, I can't say, and I haven't seen enough to believe that that is an accurate statement.
All right. So. And I should stress, like, on this episode, we're just giving our thoughts and ideas. We're not, you know, it's not set in stone. You know, like, this is just what we think. Like, there's no right or wrong answers here.
Yeah, of course.
You know, so, you know, if anyone wants to write in and tell us how terrible we are, everyone's entitled to their own opinion. And that's what this episode is. Curtis, your thoughts, sir.
Okay, so I'm gonna preface this by saying I listen to a YouTube channel a lot called Science and Futurism with Isaac Arthur. If you're interested in this sort of stuff, it's a fantastic channel. The guy is a scientist. I don't remember which branch his specialty is, so I don't want to mistakenly say that he's an astrophysicist when he may not be. I'm fairly certain he's a physicist of some kind, but he talks a lot about this kind of stuff.
Okay.
In like a real scientific fashion. So a lot of my influences on these questions and things that I've pondered come from a rooting in known science. So to answer this question, are we alone in the universe? As far as we know, we are. But we don't know very much. So that really doesn't count for anything. We can't. Mm-hmm. We really only know what's going on for about 100 light year radius around us, which is about 1/1,000th of the radius of the entire galaxy, never mind the many billions of galaxies that are out there. So I think it's ridiculous to claim that we definitely know that we're alone. But at least in our little corner of the cosmos, it seems as though the most likely answer is that, yeah, it's just us out here. Maybe there's someone out farther away, but we've only been looking for a certain amount of time, and there's a lot of frickin' places to look. Mm-hmm. We've only got so many eyeballs that we can look with. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So, as far as we suspect, we haven't seen any evidence of anything further out than that 100 light year radius. But our observations are also limited by the speed of light, which, at a cosmological scale, it's effectively the speed of causality. So we just have to wait and see. Yep. There could be all sorts of stuff going on. You know, 10 light years away that we have no idea about. Alpha Centauri could have, you know, sprung up into a industrial civilization with radio technology, and mm-hmm. we don't know it yet. But that would be kind of funny, because if that was the case, they'd be getting bombarded with our radio waves for the last 100 years for them. And so they'd have just, it would be going haywire, and they wouldn't know what to make of it. Meanwhile, we're completely clueless to their presence. So it's a big question. And yeah. I'm going to cut it off there, or I'll ramble forever. But, yeah, hey. I think we don't know. Maybe. Yep. I like to think that there's someone else out there, but it's just impossible to tell.
All right. Well, for this question, I absolutely believe that we are not alone in the universe. And in terms of sentient life, like Richard made that distinction, and that's a good distinction to make. You know, there might be planets out there where there's plant life or microbes or whatever. But as far as sentience goes, you know, I really do believe there is someone out there. Just given the vastness of our galaxy, and then, yeah, potentially an infinite number of galaxies in a bigger universe and potentially infinite universes, you know, like it's kind of mind-boggling when you think of how big everything is and how insignificant we really are. But yeah, well, like the big hindrance for us is with space being so vast, you know, like, yeah, like Curtis, you were saying, We could have stuff happening, you know, a couple systems away, and we would never know because, you know, we just don't have the technology of seeing that far yet. You know, I mean, it's
great. Well, and we'd have to wait for the light to get here.
Yeah, and I mean, it's changing all the time too, right? Like, I mean, our telescopes are getting better. You know, we are discovering exoplanets and other star systems and so on and so forth. But, I mean, it's so huge that I would think there has to be something. I can't remember who made the statement. It was like a mathematician or something. And they said that, just mathematically, it would be impossible for there not to be other intelligent life out there, just given the mathematics of the universe.
That's fair, but here's the thing. As large as the universe is, most of it we're never going to be able to see or encounter.
No.
Because most of it is moving away from us, and we away from it, faster than the speed of light. There are millions of galaxies that are going to disappear over our cosmological horizon, never to be observed by us again.
Yep.
So, stuff leaves our observable universe all the time, constantly. Yep. So as big as it is, as much as it's expanding, it's actually kind of shrinking because there's less and less that we can observe all the time.
Yep. Not just that, but to quote Babylon 5, in the first season of Babylon 5, there was an episode, I can't remember the episode. It's when Commander Sinclair's girlfriend goes out and she encounters one of the first ones, whom we didn't know were one of the first ones. And Jakar described that alien race, because there was a plant on Babylon 5 and it had an ant on it. And he picks the ant up with his finger and he's telling her, this ant really doesn't understand. I'm paraphrasing, of course, doesn't really understand who I am or what, or where it is. And that's what that alien race is to us. Like, they see us as ants. We're insignificant to them. They don't even notice us. So I'm thinking that, there might be races out there that are far older than us that either don't care or they're leaving. Maybe there's a prime directive involved, like on Star Trek, where, these aliens choose not to interfere. Or... life is completely different than what we've ever imagined. We think of life as, based on what we see here on Earth, right? And even
carbon-based.
Yeah, and even in science fiction, we base life kind of on what we have here, whether it's the Star Wars universe or Star Trek or Babylon 5, usually one head, two arms, two legs, you get the more exotic aliens in Star Wars and Babylon 5, but they're all kind of based on things that exist in our world. I really think if there are aliens, and I guess this is going into question number two, what would aliens be like? I think we're more likely to find something beyond our understanding. We're more likely to find something like that than we are to find a Vulcan, for example. That thinks similar to us, has a similar type of history. I think we're more likely to meet the aliens from Alien than we are the Vulcans from Star Trek. I really think when we get out there, aliens will be far different than we thought. Or,
I've got my fingers crossed for the bugs from Starship Troopers myself.
Yeah, something like that. Or, L. Ron Hubbard, the guy who created Scientology, he did a book called Battlefield Earth, which was made into a terrible movie. That's just my
opinion. Hey, you know what? I liked that movie. It was cheesy and it was awesome.
Oh man, that was one movie I seen in the $5 bin at Walmart or somewhere. I picked it up. I got about halfway through it and I literally threw it in the garbage. I was like, I don't even want to risk seeing this again. But the aliens on that show, because they're kind of like giants compared to us. I think we're gonna. If we do meet humanoid, races, who's to say what they're going to be, if they're going to be the same height as us? They might be like giants to us, or they might even be smaller than us.
Depends on their biology. Amount of oxygen in the atmosphere limits the size of a lot of organisms on our planet.
And gravity. Like, mm-hmm. if gravity's less there, they might grow bigger. You know? Like, who's the... We might encounter giants, you know? But, all right, so I kind of started off that question. My opinion is, what would aliens be like? I really think they're going to be unlike anything that... I think, if anything, they're going to be more like I said, the aliens from Alien. You know, like, they're going to be... You know, like, they're not going to think like us. They're not going to, you know, be like, you know, they're not going to be like us. I think it's more likely we're going to encounter, you know, something completely that we're unprepared for. Richard, what are your thoughts? What would aliens be like if there are aliens?
Honestly, it would really depend on the type of planet that evolves. I think that if it was a similar Earth-type planet, I think that it's possible that there would be marginally similar humanoids in the way that, like, Klingons are similar to Romulans and Vulcans. Mm-hmm. But if it's a completely different type of planet, it could be anything. It could literally be a xenomorph. It could be a Sheliak. And hell, it could even be like a Cytherian. We just have no way of knowing. But I think that if it was a similar planet to Earth, there would be more similarities than differences in what type of life would evolve.
But one thing to remember, though, with Star Trek is in Next Generation, when they did that episode, I think it was called The Chase. Basically, it was established that an ancient alien civilization seeded a bunch of planets, including our planet and the Klingons, right, and Romulans. So we're all from the same, you know, originators, I guess. So that's why, like, in the Star Trek, that was kind of their way of explaining in Star Trek why, you know, there's more humanoid races than not humanoid. I think that was their way of explaining that.
And I like that they did that. It makes a great part of the show, but I couldn't say that is, you know, scientific fact, right?
No, of course not.
Yeah.
And I bet you a lot of religious people did not like that episode, because, yeah, that really goes against, you know, God creating us and all that kind of stuff. Curtis, what are your thoughts? What would aliens be like if there are aliens?
Oh, broad question. I think it depends on how we encounter them. If, for example, aliens were to come here and visit us, I think it's most likely that they would be friendly and curious. Otherwise, there's very little reason for them to come out of their way to come all the way here. There's nothing unique that's here that you can't just find if you need. It's like the Independence Day aliens. Oh, they came here for the natural resources. Well, that's preposterous. There's a million better places in every solar system to get anything that we have here on Earth.
Yep.
Like, that's just so beyond preposterous. The only thing, as far as I can tell, that's really unique to Earth is its life. Notably us, for being the intelligent life. So if aliens were to bother to come out of their way to come to this little planet in our little corner of the Milky Way, a rather insignificant galaxy within the local group, then it's probably because they wanted to meet us. If they wanted to destroy us, there's easy ways to do that from halfway across the galaxy.
Yep.
We have the technology to do it now. With enough mirrors, you turn a star into a giant laser engine and basically vaporize us from 100 light years away. You know, so... If they came here, yeah, they'd be probably friendly and curious, I think.
Yeah.
If we encountered them out there, it either wouldn't be a surprise, because you can see someone coming from a long way off. This is assuming known science. This is assuming that faster than light travel is impossible, because for the moment it seems like it is, owing to the fact that the speed of light is basically interchangeable with the speed of causality. They seem to be one and the same. So chances are they'd have a lot of notice that we were coming, and we would have a lot of notice that they were coming, and we would probably have some sort of dialogue exchange before anybody got anywhere near the other person's planet. You'd have enough time to figure out languages, some sort of cultural similarities, differences, you know, you'd have time to establish relations long before you ever met face to face. But the most likely is, I'm going to agree with you guys, if we find life out there, it's probably not intelligent. It's probably single-celled or very simple, and won't have a lot of say in the matter either way. Maybe that's a bit of a Debbie Downer answer, but that's what I think.
Well, the thing of it is, like, our star and our planet are still relatively quite young, right? There are stars out there that are a lot older. With planets,
most of them actually, because most of them are red dwarfs. Yeah.
Yeah. So most of them would probably have planets that are older. So I'm thinking of anything. There's probably older races out there. You know, and like I said, that, you know, maybe we're so insignificant. I think if there is an intelligent race out there with technology beyond our technology, they probably already know about us. And maybe, you know, like I said, they have a prime directive, or maybe they just don't give a shit. You know, maybe we're not worth their time. You know, kind of like how the Vulcans kind of looked down on us for so long until Zefram Cochrane achieved warp speed. You know, like the Vulcans were quite aware of us for centuries. They just chose not to make contact because, you know, they thought we were primitive and ape-like and, you know, ready to start wars. And maybe, you know, these older races look at us with the same distinction, you know, like we're too volatile, we're too chaotic. Or, you know, it could be, you know, they're just waiting, you know, waiting for the perfect time. I remember a few years ago, I can't remember if it was NASA or, but I know they were having like a congressional meeting about, you know, establishing, you know, sending signals out into space and all that kind of stuff. And this was after Stephen Hawking died. But one of the guys that was during, you know, at that conference or whatever was saying that, you know, Stephen Hawking, his advice was not to send out signals into the universe. You know,
which is ridiculous because we've been broadcasting radio for 100 years.
That is
true. It's already out there. There's no stopping it.
That is true.
If anyone's listening, they already know we're here.
Yeah. But
I want to say I'm smarter than Stephen Hawking or anything, but I mean, come on, man. At some point,
I think with him, it was more if we suspected there certain places would have life, purposely sending signals. You know, because his opinion was, you know, that we have no way of knowing what an alien mind would think. We can't, you know, apply our own experiences because it's an alien mind. We have no idea. And if anything, he was under the belief that it's more likely, you know, if we made contact with an alien race, that they would come here not with friendship in mind, but perhaps, you know, with other intentions.
I don't agree. I just don't see the motivation.
Well, the one
thing... It takes so much to cross the cosmos. What could possibly be their motivation for bothering to come here and start a fight? I just don't see it.
I know one motivation, which, and again, I'm using human thinking behind this answer, slavery. You know, we used to cross oceans to get slaves. You know,
that was before we could build robots, though.
Well, I know, but you know,
I mean, I'm not trying to minimize, you know, the human suffering that literally built the world.
Yeah,
but when it's so much easier to just turn your local asteroid belt into an army of mechanical slaves that don't even need any input from you. You just give them some programming and put them on solar power. You don't even need to feed them. You don't need to house them. You don't need to worry about them breeding. I don't know.
Yeah. Like that's the only reason I could think of is like, the series Alien Nation. It was because those people were slaves. Their race was enslaved by a different race, and then their slave ship crashed on Earth. I think, you know, if anything, like, they would come for us. Or, you know, they could be like the Borg. You know, they come to assimilate us into their culture and society. Or it could be like that Twilight Zone episode. You know, when those aliens came and they kept, you know, were taking shipload after shipload of people, and they were carrying out this book, that was called To Serve Man. So everyone thought they were going to this paradise where they would be served for the rest of their lives. And then they find out it's a cookbook. It's not, you know, so they're being taken for basically like cattle. Who knows? But all right, let's move on.
That I'm just a buzzkill who's separated science from science fiction more than the average bear lately, because this is something that's so interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
And just with the kind of thoughts that you're expressing so far, I think you yourself would really enjoy Isaac Arthur's channel. I'll send you a link when we're done here.
Excellent.
I think you'd really enjoy a lot of his episodes.
That's awesome. No, like, and honestly, you know, we're having this discussion. We're having this discussion that every science fiction writer and creator has had.
Absolutely.
And that's why we see so much different representation. Like I said, the alien from Aliens, those aliens from the Twilight Zone, the cook people, you know.
It's literally an infinite canvas.
Yep. All right, well, my next question is, if there are aliens, you know, and do you think we've been visited? You know, like, we've all heard the stories of, you know, close encounters of people being abducted. And I don't know, nowadays with everyone having a camera phone and video capabilities, I find it weird that we're not seeing more of this, you know, like you would think. With social media and technology as it is now, that we would catch, you know, with Google Maps, you know, satellite, we would catch Bigfoot by now, but we haven't. But assuming that, you know, there are aliens out there, do you think perhaps we have been visited and just don't know it? Or maybe the government does know it. I don't know. Curtis, you take this one first. Have we been visited?
Okay. Well, for the purposes of the question, I will assume that some sort of intelligent aliens do exist. In that context, I think it's unlikely, but not impossible. For example, many people claimed that during a certain major human conflict, that a certain nation was assisted by aliens in that conflict. But if that were true, then those guys would have won, and they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Because anyone with the tech to travel between stars also has the tech to turn any reasonably powerful star into a giant laser capable of vaporizing the planet. So if they wanted to kill humans, they wouldn't need to convince other humans to do it. Not that we need a lot of convincing to kill each other, by the way. But I don't know. I don't think it's that likely. I don't think that we would have a lot of the issues that we still have if we had, in fact, been visited. I think renewable energy would be a lot further along. I think that pollution cleanup would be a lot more advanced than it is. I think that disease elimination would have come a lot farther. You know, you would think that we would just, there's no real reason to withhold, you know, certain knowledge, certain technologies, weapons, of course. But, you know, if your philosophy is to travel the stars, you must have a motivation to do that. If it's not hostile, chances are it must be friendly. If it's friendly, is it also benevolent? I think it's likely. So why wouldn't you want to, you know, help out? If you see suffering and you have it in your power to alleviate that suffering, and this is getting philosophical, not so much scientific, do you also have the obligation, if you have the power, to relieve that suffering?
Unless they have some sort of prime directive, you know?
That's fair.
Like in
perhaps we're just under observation kind of thing. Yeah,
that's what I'm thinking. Like if we have been visited, that it is for observation purposes, similar to what we see on Star Trek. You know, like with what do they call them?
Just in case, I'm going to dedicate this beer to the Picard.
What do they call
that? Duck blind.
Duck blind, yeah.
Yeah.
Where they go and observe planets and don't interfere. And the thing of it is, like, on Star Trek, you know, like, you know, a few times, you know, Picard and them and Kirk and whoever else violated the Prime Directive. But typically, if they could not violate it, they would not violate it. So they, you know, they would let civilizations perish because they figured more damage would be done if they tried saving them and you know, could only save a few. So anyway, Richard.
I just want to clarify for the record, I did say, in fact, it was unlikely. I didn't say no. Just before anybody throws any hate at me.
Oh, no, no. I think it's possible that we have been visited, but, you know, they're keeping themselves quiet. Or maybe they're just beyond our comprehension.
Except for Lady Gaga. She's pretty weird. I wouldn't be surprised if she was an alien.
I find her quite beautiful, actually. You know?
Oh, totally. Hot and cool weird, but weird nonetheless.
I used to find her, like, I wasn't sure, like, you know, because there was that rumor floating around that she was hermaphrodite or, you know, transsexual or whatever.
Whatever, try anything once.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, you know, but I don't know, she's gotten more beautiful as time has went on. But anyway, that's a whole other tangent. Just to quickly clarify, one possibility I think is there may be aliens, but perhaps they're beyond our comprehension. You know, maybe they're all around us, but we can't see them or detect them. You know, maybe they're
Calamarain or the Q, perhaps
that, or like the aliens from Time's Arrow, where they existed like on a slightly different dimensional plane. So you couldn't see them with the naked eye. But you know, when they set up
I can't remember what the heck they're called.
Davidians.
Yeah.
Yes.
And they set up the tripods and then you could see them. Like, it could be something like that.
Triolic waves.
Yeah.
Something triolic waves. Yeah.
But, you know, anything's possible, I think. And who knows, like, you know, like, maybe the governments know more than we do. It's possible. You know, and it begs the question, like, if we did find out, let's say, you know, a government, you know, what it's NASA or whatever, they actually found evidence of, like, say, a spaceship, you know, would they tell us or would they keep it quiet?
No way.
Not a chance.
No way. We are not ready for that. There, especially NASA in the States, you've got a gigantic part of your population that is not ready to hear that.
Yeah, that's
for like religious reasons and stuff. I'm not knocking anybody, but that would seriously disrupt life on this planet. You thought COVID shook things up? That would be 10 times what COVID did.
Yeah. There's a comic book series. It's called Letter 44. I haven't read it, but I want to read it. And basically the premise is, you know, a new guy is elected as president of the United States. So he goes and he takes, you know, his seat behind his Oval Office, and there's a letter on his desk that's marked Letter 44. And every president gets...
So that would be Obama then?
I guess it would have been Obama. So every president gets this letter, right? And they open it. And basically, it's like, aliens are real, we've made a deal with them, and we have to basically follow their instructions or they're going to annihilate us. So it's an interesting premise, and I really like the writer. I believe it's Charles Soule. He writes a lot of Star Wars stuff right now in terms of comic books. But yeah, definitely want to check out. But anyway, Richard... do you think we have been visited, if there is alien life?
I don't think so. I don't think that it's likely, but perhaps, theoretically, at least from my perspective, if there was intelligent life, many, many thousands of years ago. It's possible that they visited the planet on sort of like a survey mission, you know, if they're flying around the cosmos. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I don't think, I personally don't believe any of the, you know, abduction stories of the last 100 years that we've, you know, heard about in media and things like that. I don't necessarily have an explanation for each single one of them, but I don't believe that that's actually what happened.
Lack of an explanation does not mean aliens.
Agreed, yeah. Agreed, exactly. So if it did happen, I think it would have most likely been tens of thousands of years ago on some kind of, you know, charting mission through the cosmos. Because, I mean, that's probably what we do. We'd go and survey the rest of the galaxy if we had the option to. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe we did come across a planet with very primitive life forms. And we just kind of checked it out, took a look around, maybe built a pyramid or two and moved on. That's pretty much like how I would see that.
Yeah, in terms of UFOs and alien abduction and stuff, like, I do think there's something there. I don't know if it's aliens or if it's our own government doing something. Well, when I say government, I'm talking U.S. or Russia or whatever. You know, Big Brother, you know, up to no good. I mean, for a long time.
So any large government in the world, potentially.
Yeah, like if you're in Russia and there's reports of aliens, it could be the Russian government doing some sort of experiment.
I wouldn't like push it, like break it down to just like governments that we don't like. It could be Canadian government.
No. Yeah.
Could be like UK government. Could be any government.
Oh yeah, right? Yeah. When I say that, I'm just referencing like wherever you are. If there's stories of aliens or flying saucers, you know, it could be that there was something going on with your local government, or maybe governments. Maybe it's, you know, multi, you know, group.
Multinational.
Yeah. And I mean, for a long time, you know, like there were rumors that of the stealth bombers, you know, like the US government denied for a long time that they had these things and they were flying around. And we know that they're real now, that they've come out and said, yeah, you know, like I'm talking like this is like 70s and 80s. But, you know, they for a while there, people were seeing these things and calling them flying, you know, aliens. But they were actually stealth bombers. So,
or weather balloons.
Or, yeah, it could be weather balloons, you know. Or, you know, this kind of goes into our next couple questions. Maybe they are some sort of plane or contraption, but not from another world, but maybe from another Earth. So let's go, like, okay, so I'll use that as a tangent to jump to the next, not the next one, but the one after. We'll come back to the next one. Multiverse theory. I really do believe that there is a multiverse. I believe that, like Data explained in Star Trek, the parallels, the episode where Worf, you know, crosses a bunch of different universes. There is the theory that anything that can happen does happen in another universe. And I think, this is just my opinion, so yeah, I'll start this off. This is just my opinion that we are all connected in some way to our counterparts in other universes. And the reason why I say this is, you know, I think this could explain deja vu. You know, when we get that feeling that we've done something before, but we know we couldn't have, but maybe we did in another universe. And we're just kind of, you know, kind of remembering. I think that also goes into the Mandela effect, where we misremember things. You know, maybe, you know, those things that we do remember, like the whole concept is, you know, people were remembering Nelson Mandela dying in prison when actually he just died in 2013, I believe. And he was, you know, a lot of people didn't realize he was president of South Africa for quite a while. And, you know, people thought he died in prison in the 80s. Maybe in another parallel Earth, he did die in prison in the 80s. And we're, you know, tapping into like that kind of joint memory from another universe. You know, tapping into the multiverse theory, maybe we have been contacted not by aliens, but by another Earth. You know, maybe those flying saucers are, you know, stealth craft from another Earth that crossed over into our universe. You know, like there's a TV series called Fringe, which really delves into this a lot. It delves into a parallel Earth. And there's also another show. Oh crap, I can't remember. It's with J.K. Simmons. It's on Amazon Prime. I think it's called Counterpart, where basically, like, there's two Earths. And this guy crosses, like, the guy, like, himself from this other universe is, like, this hardcore, you know, spy killer guy. And this other guy is just, like, a normal dude. And then he has to go over and pretend to be this other guy on this other Earth, but... Like, I just...
Sounds like a Jet Li movie.
Yeah. Like, I really do believe in the multiverse theory. I think that it, you know, could be an explanation for, like I said, for deja vu. It could be an explanation for the Mandela effect. It could be... Like, I don't know about you guys, but do you ever... For the, you know, you're just sitting around or whatever, and all of a sudden you get, like, a pain in your arm. Or, you know... Your knee gives out for no reason. You know, maybe you in a parallel universe, maybe you just broke your arm. And that pain is passing through, you know, the dimensional barriers and multiple yous are experiencing a little bit of that pain. Or, you know, maybe your knee just got broke in another universe and that's why your knee gave out in this one. Even though it's not broke... You know, you did feel a little bit of the effects because, you know, the pain was so great that it actually crossed over universes. I really think things like that, you know, I really think that's the multiverse is a thing. I think, and also I think ghosts. When I say ghosts, like when people see an apparition, or is that the right word? Apparition. Maybe they're not seeing someone that's died. Maybe they're just catching a glimpse into another universe. You know, maybe the barrier that separates universes, maybe in that particular spot, it's weak and we can see through it. Kind of like the old VHS tapes, you know, when you would record over a program. But sometimes, like, this is like the really old VHS tapes. You'd record over a program, and then sometimes you could see the other program that you recorded over. It's still there, but faintly. Maybe it's something like that, you know. Maybe that explains ghosts. Maybe that explains, you know, these strange occurrences. You know, any kind of strange occurrence, you know, maybe... You know, it's tied into the multiverse. Oh, and by the way, on a quick tangent, I just saw the teaser trailer for Spider-Man 3. It delves into this multiverse theory quite well, and I am so excited for that new Spider-Man movie. It looks really cool. But anyway, Richard, what are your thoughts on the multiverse theory?
I think that it's something that I've put a lot of thought into, and I really enjoy the concept of it. And it could potentially explain a lot of things that we don't have explanations for. And a lot of people, you know, they look at that and say, hey, that sounds like it could be correct. And they think to themselves, well, you know, it's probably that. Seems very easy. I personally, I'd like to think that that's definitely a possibility, and that there's just trillions of universes or millions just living in the same, almost the same space-time as we are. But again, like, we have zero evidence to confirm that. Everything is circumstantial, hypothetical. Mm-hmm. But I think that it would be something I'd like to know for sure, but probably never will. But I think I like to think that it's pretty accurate. You know, I just think that that would be a really cool way to explain these things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, too many explanations are just so boring and mundane. Like, yeah, we had stealth bombers and we had weather balloons. This is boring. I actually would like to be proven that these cool things are actually real.
Yep. Yep. And that's the thing, like, with the multiverse theory, again, you know, we imagine kind of like Star Trek where, you know, like you get the alternate reality where, you know, in this universe, Riker's captain and Data wears a red uniform. And then the next one, he's wearing a gold uniform. It could be that the multiverse, you know, is everything's completely different. You know, maybe there's very few what I would call parallel Earths where things are very similar to us. Maybe the multiverse is completely foreign. You know, everything's completely different. Because, you know, like when you talk like the butterfly effect and stuff, there's so many variables that could have changed the course of anyone's life. You know, for me, for example, I'll use my grandpa. You know, my grandpa fought in World War II. If my grandpa had died, I wouldn't be born. I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't know you guys because I wouldn't exist. You know, Trek 1701 wouldn't exist. You know, like so many things would have changed if my grandpa had died during the war. You know, and I just. You know, like, it's fun in Star Trek when they do that, you know, where, you know, Riker's captain, and like I said, you know, where things are just a little bit different, but I think in the multiverse, things would be drastically different, because there's so many variables, you know, that could be changed to drastic, you know, like I said, the butterfly effect, that would drastically alter the course of not just your life, but, you know, history. But then, again, with the multiverse theory, you know, there's an infinite number of multiverses. So there has to be multiverses where there is another Chris Lockhart who's just a little bit different. Or maybe Chris Lockhart that's famous. Or Chris Lockhart that's, you know, super fit, you know. Or super fat. Like, you know, anything's possible. Curtis, your thoughts on the multiverse theory?
This is one of my favorite things to think about. I really like the idea of multiverse theory. I don't know that I have any real data to back it up, but you present some interesting ideas. The deja vu thing. I have experienced a lot of deja vu in my life, and
mm-hmm.
my job has me doing not much but sitting there thinking all day, so I get to think about this stuff. And that is one of the thoughts I've had. And I've always had a problem accepting that, like, oh, some big bang happened and poof, our universe came into existence. Okay, great. I can accept that, but that can't be all there is. Yeah. If that happened, that's weird enough by itself to just spontaneously be. There has to be more than that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like, God, I had so much while you guys were talking, but I think you guys said most of it. I'm mostly with Chris on this one. I really like the idea of the multiverse theory. Of course, I can't prove it. As far as ghosts go, my pet theory for a long time was the fourth dimension is to the three-dimensional universe that we inhabit as our three-dimensional universe would be to a two-dimensional universe. And I don't know, everyone's probably seen that Flatland video with Dr. Quantum where he explains, like, you know, a two-dimensional being would have absolutely no perception of what the heck I was if I were to just suddenly pop into a two-dimensional universe, because it would only ever be a sliver of my being
mm-hmm.
within that universe. And most of me, technically 100% of me, would actually have to be outside of that universe because it doesn't have depth. So for the ghost thing for me, it was always like, well, what if it's just a fourth-dimensional being who accidentally, you know, crossed through our almost non-existent to them, three-dimensional universe temporarily, and maybe that's what people are seeing, which is not all that different from your multiverse theory, really. They're really kind of in the same vein, so it's definitely one of my favorite theories, and I'd love to ponder it, but I'm just not sure we'll ever have any way of gathering that evidence. Maybe one day, you know. That means in some universe I ended up with Nicole DeBoer, which would be super cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a fun thing to think about.
Or you ended up with hair.
Or I ended up with hair. Or tall. <You know? laughs> Or maybe I was, you know, I got to play Captain Sisko or something. Or Picard or what have you.
Yeah.
You know, so it's fun to think about all the stuff I might have done. I'll never know about it.
So that kind of leads into the question we skipped. And that is theories of space and time. By this, I mean, you know, the space. You know, I'm referring more to the space-time continuum, and how we perceive time. So, I'll leave this one off. So what I mean here is, I have this theory. Which, I have no way of proving one way or the other. And I might never, you know, like this theory might change because I might not even know I ever had this theory, if my theory is correct. And that is that our perception of time, we always see time as going forward, right? You know, for us as humans, we observe this through the aging process. You know, as time moves on, we get older. People die. We observe this by the sun. We observe this by the seasons. But what if our perception of time isn't accurate? What if it's not right? That being said, what if, you know, and this, I'm getting ahead of myself. What if time, multiple timelines are happening at the same time? By that I mean, as we sit here discussing this, you know, maybe, you know, going back to World War II, maybe that's happening right now, concurrent to us, rather than, you know, 90 some years in the past.
Well, if you were the wormhole aliens, that would be the case.
That's kind of where I'm coming from. You know, that, you know, where, you know, there's multiple timelines going on right now, and time around us is always changing, but we lack the ability to accurately perceive it. And what I mean is, you know, right now, you know, maybe, like I said, World War II is happening. It's 1944. You know, because my grandpa was a gunner. I'll use my grandpa as an example. He was a gunner on Vancouver Island. Maybe the Japanese attack tonight in his time. And maybe he dies. And then I will cease to exist. And this whole timeline, this whole discussion, everything will be rewritten. You guys will never be aware of it. You guys will never remember me. I'll disappear from your conscience. You know.
Can I jump in?
And you'll go on and you'll know no different. Go ahead, Curtis.
Well, I think this goes back to the multiverse theory question. I don't think that you would cease to be existing. Because we're talking to you now. What happened, happened. I don't think there's any changing what happened. Time can't go backward, as far as we know. We can perceive it differently, but what happened happened. But maybe every different outcome of every different choice, because outcomes are generally the results of choices for us humans anyway, that would just spawn a new version of reality in the multiverse where, that's right, you weren't here. But we're not currently observing that one. My consciousness, from its point of view right now, in the multiverse, is not observing that version of reality. I'm observing the version that I'm in right this second.
Yeah.
If all of that rambling nonsense made sense.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, like, with my theory is that, you know, different times are happening concurrently. There isn't an 80-year gap that we, you know, we perceive it as like an 80, 90-year gap, but it's actually not. Like, our perception of time is dictated by what we can perceive. But if we can't perceive everything, you know, and we can't, like, you know, just in the same way a mosquito can't perceive what I am, other than, you know, a source of food. You know,
that's an interesting point, because it's not just perspective, it's also scale of perspective.
Yeah.
Makes a big difference.
So, I mean, I don't know. I just think maybe, you know, our perception of time is not what we think it is. But anyway, and one thing that I find very interesting is, you know, black holes and how time would be different. Like, if you were like on the event horizon of a black hole and you started going down a black hole, how the passage of time would completely change.
Would almost stop, actually.
Yeah. Like that movie Interstellar. I really liked how that... I mean, I didn't quite understand it the first time I watched it, and I was like, this is kind of hokey. But now, you know, going back and kind of going through some of the things that they, you know, went through, it was like, this is very interesting. Like when they went to that one planet, and an hour on that planet is like 10 years or whatever up in the ship. So that one guy was like by himself for like 28 years or whatever it was. But for them, it was only like less than 3 hours.
The Voyager episode like that too, with that weird shaped planet with Daniel Day Kim, who also played in Lost.
Oh, right.
Yeah, the donut planet.
Yeah.
Oh, I got to go back and rewatch that. But anyway, I've rambled on long enough. Richard, what are your thoughts on theories, or do you have any theories of space and time?
I don't know that I've ever thought about time in that way. That's an interesting concept of how everything is just happening always concurrently, which is an intriguing thought. But I've always sort of, I remember seeing something a long time ago about how, you know, the only reason we perceive time is because we choose to try to measure it. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't, I couldn't say for sure, like, this is exactly how time is, or even if time exists in the same way that, like, I exist or you exist. We just sort of choose to measure that in certain ways, and days and years and months. It's
a measure of observable causality.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So for me, it's like, it's like with everything, like, everything we give value to is only because we choose to give value to it. Because, like you said before, in the view of the cosmos itself, we are insignificant. But we choose to put value on that and measure our time and to measure the way we perceive causality. It's a very interesting concept. And I don't have any, like, anything I can think of for, like, theories about time and space specifically, but definitely something that I will be pondering as time goes on.
Curtis, your thoughts on space and time theories? Do you have any theories of space and time?
Well, I gotta say, you are gonna love a link that I send you later. It's one of Isaac Arthur's videos called Black Hole Farming, and it specifically deals with what you're talking about with black holes. And the idea is that you could eventually, with an advanced enough civilization, and it's from a series he does called Civilizations at the End of Time. So this is a very advanced race that we've become at this point, and Earth is long gone. And basically most of what's left in the universe is dying stars and black holes. But black holes emit something called Hawking radiation, which could, in theory, if you were more of an energy-based society, as in like you were uploaded minds into a computer system, you could potentially survive off of this Hawking radiation. Now, it emanates from a black hole very slowly, but you need to be so close to a black hole to harvest it that your perception of time would make it seem as though you pretty much had a nuclear power plant right there. Like in the time that we observe here on Earth, it seems like black holes emit Hawking radiation at an extremely slow rate. But if you were to observe that rate from beside a black hole, or perhaps even standing on the event horizon, it would seem like it was coming in at a lot faster rate. Mm-hmm. Causality has its speed limit altered according to your perception. So you might have little uploaded mind humans colonizing around all these different black holes stretched across what was left of the universe, because presumably you would have moved all your galaxies into a central location, which is relatively simple, technologically speaking. And despite the fact that you would be millions of light years apart from each other, the time to, you would be experiencing time so slowly that even the millions of years that it would take your signals to cross the cosmos to talk to each other, it would appear to you no different than just like we're talking right now over Skype. The time delay is there, but you're not experiencing as a delay because you're so close to the black hole. Time is altered for you relative to the rest of the universe, such that a 20 billion year phone call seems like it takes 20 seconds.
Hmm.
So definitely you're going to love some of these links that I send you. It's really interesting stuff to think about.
Oh yeah.
And it's one of my favorite things to ponder. And it's in pondering these very, you know, time and space, and what does time have to do with it? How is it a component of space time? How does it fit in there? What does it have to do with mass and your, you know, distance to it and all that sort of stuff? That sort of led me to stop referring to the speed of light as the speed of light and start referring to it as the speed of causality. But even then, the speed of causality changes depending on your perspective of it. And you can alter that by standing next to a supernova or an event horizon, or even here on Earth, you can go stand next to the Pyramid of Giza and age a little bit slower than the rest of us. We're talking like nanoseconds after long exposure, but it's a very real and measurable thing. So it's really not even a theory of any kind. Time definitely happens differently depending on where you are and how much mass you happen to be standing next to.
Yeah. Interesting. Interesting.
I don't know if that really nailed the question that you were going for, but that's everything I had built up for it. So.
Hey, no problem. That was awesome. All right, so before we move on, to go on a side question to this question, theories of space and time. In pop culture, in terms of time travel, what is your favorite explanation of time travel and how time works? And by that I mean, take Back to the Future, you know, where he goes back in time, he has to get his parents together or he will cease to exist. Say Star Trek, like we mentioned Time Zero, Part 1 and 2, where Data was meant to go back in time. He was meant to, die and lose his head and for it to be in the cave.
The old predestination paradox.
Yeah. Or something like the Avengers Endgame, where, you know, the Hulk is explaining that, you know, because they're talking about going back in time and killing Thanos when he was a baby, and then he'll never, get the Infinity Stones. And the Hulk explains you can't do that, because all you'll do is create a branch timeline. Our reality will still exist. You know, going back in time.
Back to the Future style.
Yeah, going back in time doesn't change the past. Because when you go back in time, that past becomes your present, which now cannot be changed by something you do. Because your what you consider your future is now your past. So my question is, what do you guys think? Like, what do you think is the best explanation for time travel? The Avengers one's really tough. Because I kind of bought into the theory that at the end of, I don't know if you guys watched Avengers Endgame. But Cap goes back in time and basically lives his life with Peggy. And I just assumed, you know, he would be living, you know, he was meant to do that. So he becomes part of that timeline. And I was corrected. And because that was the intention of the writers, but the director said no. Because if he did that, you know, like, he's creating a branch reality, which is what he must have done. And then used somebody to help him go back to his original reality. You know, Tony Stark or whoever. But I kind of like the explanation of the Avengers that, you know, you can't go back in time and change your history because, you know, all you'll do is create a new timeline. You won't create, you know, like, you're not actually changing anything in your history. So I kind of lean towards that. I kind of think that, you know, if you could go back in time, I don't think he would change anything. I don't think, you know, like, it wouldn't be like the butterfly effect. It wouldn't be like, you know, there's a famous Ray Bradbury story called The Sound of Thunder, where they go back in time and hunt dinosaurs. And you have to follow this certain path. And if you deviate from the path, you could change history. And that's what happens. One guy goes back in time, gets scared by the dinosaurs, ends up, like, stepping on... I think that's where the butterfly effect comes from. I think he steps on a butterfly.
Yeah.
And then they go back, and basically the Nazis are running the Earth now. Like that's their present. So, anyway, the Avengers explanation of Endgame I thought was absolutely brilliant. It really made me think of time travel in a different way. And I kind of think that's how it would go. But Curtis, what are your thoughts on what's your favorite time travel?
Well, I guess this depends on how you answered our multiverse theory, because if you are just creating an alternate timeline, which I think is much more likely than actually traveling back in time, which I find to be preposterous, I think it's far more likely that all you'd be doing is visiting a different version, a different instance of the multiverse, as it were. And, man, we're going to have so much fun with this when we watch Lost. But I haven't seen Endgame. I haven't seen any Avengers movie past the first one, I don't think. But it's interesting. The dilemma that they're faced with sounds a lot like the one that Jack and Saeed and the boys from Lost are faced with when they find themselves back in time on the island with the childhood version of Ben.
Yep.
You've got this person who does seemingly incredibly terrible things when they're older. So can you even try to kill them as a kid and prevent that, maybe? I don't think so, because if your multiverse theory is correct, if you accept the fact that, pardon me, every different outcome to a situation creates a new branch of reality where each of those outcomes took place, and that universe proceeded on from that point, which of course would mean many trillions of new universes were spawned every second, which is fine. We don't know that there's a limitation on room. We can have as many as we want. Choice is one of those things that can affect the branching of the multiverse. Now, can you really hold a childhood version of someone accountable for the choices that they haven't made yet? What could still go on in that person's life that might lead to a different choice? I don't think it's personally, for me, it's a question of ethics in that example in particular. Not getting into that, because that's a whole other thing. And again, I'll talk about that whenever we get around to Lost. I don't I don't buy into the idea necessarily of time travel. I suspend my disbelief for the sake of watching Lost because I love the show, and I realize that it's fiction. But as far as our quote-unquote reality goes, I find it far more likely that simply a new instance of the multiverse is spun up on the server, as it were, facilitating the whatever choice or action created that branch and moving forward from there. I hope that made sense. I'm about two beer deep, and they're big beers. So.
Well, the Avengers Endgame explanation also delves into the fact that, because they're going back in time to get Infinity Stones, right? Because Thanos destroyed the Infinity Stones, so they don't have them anymore. So they have to go back in time and get them and bring them back to their present, so they could, you know, bring everyone back to life, right? But they make very clear that once they're done, they have to take those stones back to the point in which they took them. You know, so they so essentially you're clipping all the branches that they've created. So they're restoring the timeline back to what it originally was once they've completed their task.
Well, like I said, it depends on how you answered the multiverse theory question, and I think it's entirely appropriate that it was asked before this one.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's like a perfect preface, because this question very much depends on the multiverse question.
Yep. Richard, what are your thoughts on time in pop culture? What's your favorite take on it?
So, just to clarify, if I recall correctly, Avengers specifically, in that example, they contradicted themselves in the different theories of time travel that we're currently privy to. So there's the one theory that you can go back and you can change something and come back to a changed timeline.
Yeah.
And then there's the other theory is that when you go back and you change something, it creates a skewed timeline as seen in Back to the Future, and you would go back to that, essentially. So I don't remember the specifics. It was in a review video. You might have to look it up. But if time travel were possible, I don't think that it would be wise for anyone to go back and change anything, even as small as moving a rock, because I think that the flow of causality has to be respected. Mm-hmm. And there's too much that could happen if they changed it. So, yeah, we could go back. And we could take out, you know, Stalin, and we could take out, you know, Mao, and, you know, Kim Jong Il, Kim Jong Un, and their grand Kim Jong Un's grandfather. We could take out all those people. Sure. What could be possible is somebody else, even worse, taking over, right?
Yeah.
So say we took out Stalin. And say, you know, somebody else decided to take over in his place who was 10 times worse, and that caused the eradication of the entire planet. We have to respect, no matter how good our intentions are, we have to respect the flow of causality. And even just the idea of going back and just even to observe, perhaps, there's too high a risk of contamination of the timeline. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a good idea.
It's the absolute height of hubris to assume that you could affect a better outcome than the one that already happened.
Absolutely.
That's entirely arrogant to assume.
Mm-hmm. The most arrogant thing I could probably think of in this moment is going back and who gives this group of people or this person the right to say that they can make the history of the Earth better? Mm-hmm. We can all have theories. We can all say, this could have been way better if this happened, or this could have been way better if this guy didn't exist, so on and so forth. But you can't actually do that in any sort of, like, moral sense.
Well, and
especially, like...
Like, the ahead. Thing, like, you could do it in a moral sense, like, in the sense that, you know, like, you do have the best of intentions.
Oh, you could justify it.
Yeah, but there's so many variables that you could not take into account that could possibly make things a million times worse.
Exactly, and I think Curtis mentioned it earlier, where, like, you could go back and, sure, you could kill the child version of this person, but this child version has committed no crimes.
Yeah.
I don't subscribe
to... They haven't even had the opportunity to make the choice. How do you know what they're going to do?
Exactly. Yep. And even if we think we know what they're going to do, we cannot do that. It's like in Star Trek, where you are guilty of the sins of your father.
Well, and it depends, too, on like where you stand on the predestination paradox idea. If you believe in it, then, oh, yes, I was meant to come back and stop this and whatever. But if you don't believe that, then your mere presence in the past is enough to alter it. And you have no way to know for sure. You cannot say with conviction that, yes, this person will be horrible. Therefore, I must kill the child version of them. No, I don't accept that.
No, not a chance. So as much as I don't think that time travel is possible, nor should it be possible, there's no way I would ever believe that any human on the planet could be, you know, intellectually and morally advanced enough to be able to do that beyond a shadow of a doubt. Not a chance.
Yeah.
And if we ever get that technology, it should be destroyed. It is not safe.
Well, and there's also the theory, and like Doctor Who, like there's certain things you can't change no matter what. I forget.
What there's going to be turning points in time.
Yeah, I forget what they call it. Like where, like he can actually try, like say to go back and kill Hitler, but he can't. Like he's protected by the universe because he's meant to do the things he did. And then also there's H.G. Wells did a book called The Time Machine. They made it into a movie in 2002 with I think Guy Pearce.
If I recall correctly, that movie wasn't that good.
No, I've read The Time Machine. It's a good story. It's interesting. But the movie did have some good points to it. It deviated from the book, obviously, because the book is only like 100-some pages. So they added a lot to in that movie. One of the things they added was him, like the reason why the time traveler creates the time machine in the first place is because his the love of his life is killed. So he builds this time machine to go back in time and save her life. So he does it. He goes back in time, saves her life, but then she immediately dies a different way, like shortly thereafter. So then he goes back in time again, saves her again, and again she dies. Like, it's like the universe... It's almost like Final Destination.
That's another theme from Lost.
Yeah, it's almost like Final Destination. Like, you know, like... I forget the first time she died in a mugging, so he stops the mugger before he ever mugs the younger or the past version of himself and his wife or girlfriend or whatever, and then he observes them, and then she gets run over by a horse and carriage by accident, like a horse gets spooked and like runs her over and she dies. So he goes back in time and prevents that from happening, and then like I don't know, something like a piano falls on her head, I can't remember. But he's like every time I go back in time, she dies. Like this, it's like the universe is against me. So he decides to go forward in time to find the answer. Like there's got to be a reason this is happening. There's got to be a reason for him to stop this. And he gets he meets, I can't remember what, he meets like the head of the Morlocks or whatever, like, I don't know, 6,000 years in the future or whatever. And he gets his answer. This guy tells him, like, you know, if you built the time machine to go back in time and save her, if you save her and she lives, you know, you'll never build the time machine. So that's why she keeps dying, because that is the reason he built it in the first place. So if she lives, he'll never build it to go back and save her in the first place, so she'll never be saved. It's a paradox.
Yeah, there's certain times, and there's definitely TV shows, and there's pop culture, and there's like scientific theories regarding that. Like, there's always going to be certain moments in space-time that are unchangeable, and they will find a way to make it happen. And as much as you might think to yourself, like, oh, there's no way that the universe could be sentient in such a way, somehow, some way, it happens. Mm-hmm. And, you know, especially in pop culture and, like, Final Destination itself, I've been watching a lot of, like, review and breakdown videos about, like, horror movies and stuff, and Final Destination was one of them, and it was almost as if death itself was a sentient individual, mm-hmm. with, like, an accountant book of, like, the lives and the deaths that need to happen and how they're going to happen, and, you know, there's almost no way to avoid it, and if, like, you're on this list, he's going to find you and he's going to get you eventually. Mm-hmm. And it's actually really cool. There's a channel called CZ World. So Charlie Zulu World. The guy goes into depth about quite a few really cool things, including the Saw series, Final Destination, and a number of others, if you wanted to check that out. But yeah, I also believe that there's certain specific turning points in space-time that we may not even know what they are. And there's no way to know that, you know, if we could change them or if we should. And that's just the way of things.
Well, and I just want to quickly go back and piggyback on what I said about Hitler. I by no means am supporting Hitler in any way. If anyone deserved to die, it was definitely that guy. He's definitely, you know, the personification of evil in my mind. But that being said, you know, there's the real strong theory, and I think a great possibility, that had Hitler not been in charge, not, you know, spearheaded the things that he did, we wouldn't have went to the moon. You know, like, a lot of those scientists that were building rockets for Hitler were, you know, doing all these experiments that, you know, that, you know, the Americans used. They gave a lot of these old Nazi scientists immunity, and they put a man on the moon. You know, like, our space program wouldn't be, you know, not that we got this huge, awesome space program right now, but it is, the interest is growing again. It is, you know, moving forward once again. We wouldn't have got where we wouldn't be where we are had we not had these scientists, and had Hitler not employed these scientists.
Affordable consumer cars?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Like, if Hitler hadn't been pushing these guys to create all these things for him, they wouldn't have created it later on for NASA and, you know, the Allied countries. So who's to say what would have happened, you know? You know, it's unfortunate, but, you know, maybe things happen for a reason, you know. But anyway, I we'll move on to the next question, which is also a big question. It's pretty heavy. Is there a God? Richard, what are your thoughts? Is there a God?
I am of two minds. 83 on this one. My intellectual scientific brain says no. That's not a thing. It's not a reality. But my more open, sort of like agnostic brain says yes. But I think that there would be multiple of them. And my personal bias is Norse mythology. That's sort of the spiritual level, or the spiritual road that I follow. And which brings another thought from another TV show called Stargate. If there were gods, would they really be gods, or would they just be so beyond us that we view them as gods. Like in the episode of Star Trek where they find the Proto-Vulcans and they think that, you know, the Picard is one of their gods.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something to that effect. And in Stargate, it's the Asgards where they, you know, take the title of like Thor and Freya. And, you know, I think that's if aliens, advanced aliens existed, I think that would be more, you know, in my mind, that's more like how it would be, where there's not actually gods, just really advanced aliens.
And in the Marvel universe, that's essentially what the Asgards are, Asgardians. Like Odin and Thor and all them, like they used to come down to Earth and hang out with the Vikings and stuff and drink with them and party. But the Vikings saw them as gods because they could fly and they could do all these amazing things. But really, they were just aliens that looked like them and were more advanced and had powers that, you know, trumped anything humans were capable of. Curtis, what are your thoughts? Is there a god?
Oh, I have many. A god / gods. I think that if you believe in something and it affects your life and guides your values and choices, then it demonstrably exists because of the fact that it has a measurable effect on reality.
Mm-hmm.
I think it means something different to everybody, and it's a very subjective question. I don't think that this question can be properly answered objectively. There will be no consensus. So, and there's a lot of different faiths that have common themes. For example, like I myself also like the idea of Norse mythology. A lot of my ancestry comes from Europe, in specific Celtic regions. But I also have indigenous Canadian ancestry.
Mm-hmm.
And I do not find those two different faith systems to be in conflict or exclusive. For example, the Old North mythology is, opposite of monotheistic.
Polytheistic.
Polytheistic, thank you. There are multiple, you know, beings that exist. In the same way as Indigenous Canadian spirituality, there are things that are done to honor spirits. There are many different spirits in Indigenous Canadian mythology and theology and religious things. Take away the taint of the monotheistic Catholic stuff that came in and destroyed lives. If you take that away and you really look at how things used to be, that, you know, you would have very similar ceremonies done here in Canada as you would have being done in Celtic Wales, for example. You have over there, you would have something called blot, which is a ceremony where you give an offering to a spirit of, say, a particular lake or the forest or something like that. Meanwhile, over here in Canada, you've got something similar. You honor the spirits of ancestors, the spirits of slain animals, animal companions, that sort of thing. There are a lot of really common themes that span the globe. I don't think that that's a coincidence. I don't think that everyone just accidentally came up with mostly the same crap. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Am I talking any kind of sense here? Am I rambling nonsense?
No,
I don't know. I've given this a lot of thought, and there is so much that is similar, specifically mm-hmm. in if you put the Abrahamic faiths to one side and look at everything else that existed before the crusade of Christianity washed over the world in a wave, there were a lot of similarities. Hinduism's like the mother faith for the Old Norse system, which translated eventually into the Celtic system, heading north and west. And if you head east across Asia, they have a very similar polytheistic system that seems like it had a lot in common with Hinduism. And as we all know, most of the indigenous North Americans came across a land bridge from Asia and probably carried a lot of the same faith systems with them, which is why they're so very related to everything that sort of spawned out of the northern part of the Middle East, basically.
Have you ever heard of Zoroastrianism?
No.
Check that one out. I'll send you a link. That one also ties in with, you know, the age and the importance of, like, the old Hindu faiths.
Okay. Well, and I know Hindu is being used as, like, they're trying to reconstruct the Old Norse faith as also true, and they're using a lot of Hindu influences in order to do that because there's a lot of similarities. So I think that there's definitely something that could be classified as gods or perhaps
great spirits.
Even if you just think of it as a concept, you know, there's definitely something that exists that is larger than us that affects us, whether it is a god, a being, a consciousness. Maybe it's just ideas mm-hmm. and concepts that we share through similar rituals. I don't know. I don't have the information enough to say, but there's definitely something.
Yeah. All right. So for me, I'm just looking up something real quick. I want to make sure I got the... Okay, yeah. So there is a video on YouTube called Stephen Fry on God. And, you know, it's a good video, where when someone asks him if he thinks, you know, there is a God, and he says, well, if there is a God, I think he's a madman. And the guy asks him, well, why? He's like, well, you know, cancer in children, you know, you got... You know, there's this bug in Africa that soul, you know, if it gets into your eye, it will burrow, you know, a hole in your eye and cause blindness. And that happens to a lot of children in Africa. Why? What's that about? Like, why are you not stopping this?
Well, that's just human ego, assuming we're more important than a bug.
Yeah, well... Is there a God? The simple answer is I don't know. I do like the idea that there is a God in heaven. I don't really like the idea that, you know, I could possibly end up in hell. I don't believe in hell. I think that is really just a ghost story that, you know, the church made up to keep people in line, and to explain away bad behavior.
Depends which church you subscribe to as well.
Yeah.
I had a stint with some born again Christians for a while when I was young and impressionable, and by their very own scripture, hell is not a place where humans go. Period. Full stop. End of story. Catholics totally absconded with that and used it to scare people.
Oh yeah. Like I remember one time, because for a long time, like, and I'll get into my beliefs a little bit more, but for a long time, I believed that there was a God, and I believed in heaven, and I believed that everyone goes to heaven, even bad people. I think, you know, I used to think that God dealt with each person individually. Do I think, you know, getting back to Hitler, do I think he gets to, frolic, you know, in the beautiful meadows and enjoy himself? No, I don't think so. I think God's probably got him in a cage. He's probably in a jail for all eternity to think about what he did. You know,
I think that's counter to the idea that, like, hell doesn't exist. And if heaven existed and we go there as spirits and our mortal sins are sort of washed away, then I don't even think that as a spirit, he has the same title or that individual. So, I mean, personally, like, I think that if heaven did exist, he would just go into heaven just like as every other, like, nameless, you know, spirit.
Well, my thought was, and again, this is my previous belief system. I don't really subscribe as much anymore. Was that God dealt with, you know, like when we did bad things here on earth, God dealt with us in his own way. He didn't just throw us to Satan, right? It was my belief that, yeah, God found ways of dealing with you. For Hitler, you know, probably the greatest punishment he could ever receive is to be in a cell in heaven, and all the people that, you know, were killed because of him, you know, he has to now talk with and make amends with somehow. Like, that's his punishment, I would think. You know, like,
it depends which version of heaven and Christianity you subscribe to, I suppose. I mean,
well,
and, if you were to take grace at face value, it's not something, and this is just according to my several years of experience with the particular church that I was with. It doesn't really, like, you don't earn it. It's just something that, like, no matter what you did, okay, you're not perfect, and you get forgiven, and you're in.
Yeah.
Now, as disturbing as that may be to some people who don't want to think about certain people ever having a good time, ever, it's either like that or it's not, you know?
That is possible. You know, like they say, Jesus did die for our sins, right? Like, that's why God, you know, God sacrificed his son for us.
Well, and I would think that, like, let's just assume for a second that God and heaven do exist. You know, if Hitler's up there and he's not in a cage and he's out and doing his thing, shouldn't that give somebody hope that, like, no matter what they did, they can be forgiven too? Isn't yeah. that, like, a better message? Yeah, I get it. Okay, we want bad things to happen to bad people, but we don't always have control over that. Isn't it better to take the good things that we can from it?
Well, and the thing is, like I said, this is the... Like, I don't know. Like, this is not, you know, this is just what I thought.
Oh, no, please don't feel like I'm attacking.
Oh, no.
What you're saying.
No. This is just what I thought, you know, like, you know, that God would not just let Hitler off the hook. And maybe Hitler is making amends up there. You know, it's possible. But I remember, I had, like, this was, I don't know, 16, 17 years ago. Someone come by the house, and he was from a different church. Not even in my town. He was, like, from a different town, different community altogether. And he was asking me, you know, do you go to church? And at the time, I didn't. I said, no. And he's like, well, are you, you know, how do you expect to get to heaven? I'm like, well, I'm going to heaven. I'm a good person. He's like, well, that, you know, that's not enough. You gotta, you know, accept Jesus into your heart. You have to read the Bible, you have to, you know, be part of a church family. I'm like, no, I don't think so, you know?
I'm with you, bro. That's a load of crap.
Yeah, like, if anything, I think the institution, and I'm not knocking anyone's church. I'm not knocking, you know, the good things that churches do. Like, the, you know, a church family is a good thing, and churches do a lot of good and a lot of bad, but, I mean, for the most part, I think they do more good than bad.
Belonging to a community adds immense value to one's life, I find.
Yeah, like, when I was going to a church for several years, and that church family was really, really great, you know. I left because I didn't entirely agree with everything I was being told, so I kind of felt like a hypocrite, so that's why I decided to go. But I not to get too deep, but, you know, Jesus fought against the institution of religion during his time. That's why he was such a threat. You know, that's why they hated him.
Mm-hmm.
Because he said, like, you don't have to pay, you know, because back then you had to go into a, in order to pray to God, you had to go into a temple. And in order to get into a temple, you had to go to a foot bath. You had to wash your feet before you can get into the temple. You had to pay to wash your feet. Then you had to pay to get into the temple. So all these priests and whatever, who, you know, temple people, you know, they were making money hand over fist. And Jesus was like, no, you can pray anywhere. My dad will hear you. Like, you know, you don't need to pay for anything. So that's why he was such a threat, you know. But now, you know, we have all these institutions now, like, especially, you know, the Catholic Church, that's making money hand over fist in the name of Jesus and God, but yet they've become the institution that, in my opinion, you know, they've become the very institution that Jesus fought against. It was the reason why he was crucified.
Plus, they're keeping a shitload of knowledge from the rest of us. They have a giant archive under the Vatican that nobody's allowed in.
Yeah.
And it's full of scrolls and books and who knows what.
Yep.
If we've ever had aliens, there's documentation of it down there. I promise you.
I'll definitely throw a shade on, you know, big organized corporate religions. Because that's not the way the individual should be able to express their faith.
That's not a spirituality. That's not a relationship.
That's a business.
Mm-hmm.
It's a corporation. Like, I love the idea of, like, just singular small churches just popping up everywhere. Like, my partner Kim, she goes to, like, a very small community-based church. It's Christian, and they have good values. And I appreciate the idea of that. And I think that there should be more of that, and there should be less corporate religions like the Catholic religion, and, you know, the Vatican, you know, Mormonism is similar to that. You know, I will definitely throw shade on corporate religion.
Yeah, me too. you know, but getting back to it, like, I would like to think there is a God, but I'm one of those people, like, I have to know for sure. And God's never spoken to me directly. Kind of like aliens, you know. I'm not gonna say with absolute, like, I think there are aliens out there. Do I know there's aliens out there? No. That's, in my mind, it's similar to God. Like, I don't know if there is a God. And I mean, like, there was an explanation on that they did on Babylon 5 when Dr. Franklin was talking about God, and he said, you know, like, there's a theory or a hypothesis that, you know, what if God made a puzzle that was so complicated that even he couldn't solve it? Maybe that's us. Maybe that's the human race. Or it could be he's just a parent, or she. I don't know if God is a man. God could be a woman, you know, according to Kevin Smith. You know, God's
Alanis Morissette.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It could be, like I was saying, like, you know, we're so complicated that, you know, he's kind of either given up on us, or, you know, like a parent, you know, he was there at the beginning, through our infancy, and now he's leaving us to find our own path. You know, just like a parent, you know, like when you raise your child to the point where they can be self-sufficient and on their own, you know, you let you know, you open the door and let them go. Maybe that's what God has done. But,
well, I've got something related to that.
Go ahead. Yeah.
There's a short story that I read. I think it was called The Egg. Have you guys read this one before?
Maybe.
I'm just going to do it by Andy Weir, perhaps.
Andy Weir, the guy who wrote The Martian.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's a short story. It's if you just type in The Egg in DuckDuckGo, it'll come up. There's a bunch. It's the Andy Weir short story.
Okay.
And basically what it is, it's the story of someone who died, and this has a little bit to do with our next question. You know what? Maybe I should save it for the next question.
Okay.
Well, it's kind of related to both, though.
Well, that was my final thought. I had a final thought that related to this question and moves into the next question.
Okay, you go ahead.
Well, I find, because, you know, like, religion interests me. You know, I've read the Bible. I have never read the Book of Mormon. I don't really intend to after I watch this documentary about Mormonism. No offense to any Mormons out there. I don't think you'll be listening anyway, but it's just not my cup of tea. Scientology is not my thing either. I find Buddhism is something that I really think is a strong possibility. and it's something that I believe in. It's Buddhism isn't really a religion. It's just kind of a way of thinking, a way of life.
Like a philosophy.
A philosophy. In that, you know, we die and we're reincarnated. And that, you know, we need to be the best we can be. We need to, you know, we need to create good karma in our life. And if we do that, you know, good things will happen to us. Either in this life or the next. Like, that's the thing. Because, you know, people will say, yeah, and karma can be good or bad. You know, because some people say, you know, like, so-and-so, you know, is a miserable SOB. You know, he lived till he was 90. Never did a good thing in his life. And yet nothing ever really bad ever happened to the guy. You know, but yet he made everyone so miserable. Well, maybe in the next life, it won't be so good for him. You know, like, that's what Buddhism teaches you. Like, you good thoughts, good words, good deeds. You strive to be the best you can be. You respect life. You respect people. You know, you're supposed to respect yourself. A Buddhist is really not supposed to drink alcohol because you're supposed to respect your body. And, you know, they believe in reincarnation, which I really believe in. I do believe that I lived before. I believe, you know, some of the things, you know, because sometimes I think of things and I was like, why do I think like that? You know, like for me, I don't like seafood. You know, maybe in a previous life, I lived by an ocean and that's all I had to eat was seafood. Maybe that's why I don't like it now.
Maybe a Kraken killed you.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. Like, I have this insane fear of drowning. Like, when I was a little kid and someone would try and hold my head underwater, I would freak out. I still do. I think in a previous life I drowned. I really believe that. And I really think, not to get too deep, but the reason why we have, you know, more people out in the open nowadays, like in terms of, you know, gay and lesbian and stuff, I think people have one explanation of why, like, say, you know, a man might be attracted to another man. It could be that in his previous life he was a woman, you know, and he's more, and maybe he, you know, and maybe the life before that he was a woman, you know, maybe maybe he's more in tune with femininity than with masculinity, you know, like maybe that explains, you know, why people feel the way they feel. Because I really believe, if you're gay or if you're a lesbian or if you're bisexual, you're born that way. I really don't think it's a learned behavior. I think that is who you are. And it could be because of reincarnation, because we are remembering past lives, you know, things that we used to be attracted to, and it carries over into this life.
The genuine ones, maybe. I know a couple of chicks who just decided they hated men and decided to pretend they were lesbians for a couple of years.
Yeah, if you're pretending.
That, yeah. That's totally different.
Yeah. but yeah, like in terms of, because our next question is what happens after death. I strongly believe in reincarnation. I really do. And this is going to sound crazy. But I do remember instances of when I was a baby. I remember thinking, here I go again. And when I was reading my book on about Buddhism, they describe reincarnation as like, you know, when you're in a body of water and you're sinking, you're getting pulled down. That is what it's like when you die. Like, you're getting pulled under the water. away from your life. And then when you are reborn, it's like when you go up out of the water and you come out of the water. That's you being reborn. So,
which sounds a lot like baptism, oddly enough.
Yeah. So I really, you know, like I said, I have remembrances of thinking that as a baby, like, here I go again. I just remember that thought. I don't remember much else. Like it seemed like every life was on fast forward for many years. Like everything was like a blur. Obviously because my brain was developing and stuff, but I remember having that thought of here we go again.
Chris's baby diary, day two, still tired from the move.
Finally broke out after 9 months.
So I do believe in reincarnation and getting back to the whole karma thing. You know, like I said, sometimes good things happen to bad people and you wonder why, you know, maybe
I don't think there's an account book, a ledger anywhere.
Well, I think, you know, like karma comes to get you either in this life or the next life. And I think karma also explains why bad things happen to good people. And by that, I mean, you know, you have someone who gets struck down with cancer, you know, and is a good person and they die at a relatively young age. And it's like, why did this happen? Why, you know, what kind of, you know, like obviously this person was a good person. They didn't do bad things in their life. How could karma have given them this cancer? But maybe in a previous life, they did something bad. And this was that karma from that life bleeding into this one. So that's why they say, like they teach you in Buddhism, you got to live the best life you can and you got to be the best person you can be. Because you need to create good karma. Because even, you know, it might, bad karma might not get you in this life, but it'll get you in the next one. So I think that could explain why bad things happen to good people. You know, and it's really no fault of theirs. I mean, shit happens, but, you know, karma's karma, you know, and I really do believe in it, in that I've seen karma firsthand. Like, I know of a person, I don't want to say too much. I know of a person, that used to steal a lot, right? And this person used to steal and I just thought this person, you know, like that behavior was despicable. I thought, you know, this person, you know, is a loser. Now, you know, fast forward a few years, this person is being stolen from. And I'm not talking like this person had like some big things stolen from them, you know, and people are, you know, why would such a bad thing, you know, happen to them? Like, you know, why would anyone steal from them? And I say it's karma. You know, they were thieving for years and now karma's come back and now they're being thieved from. So yeah, you gotta live your best life. You gotta do, you know, good thoughts, good words, good deeds. Otherwise karma will come to get you, you know, whether it's this life or the next. But that being said, you know, the idea of reincarnation also kind of makes me sad in a way. Because if there is no heaven and we're just reincarnated throughout history, that means I might never see my grandma again. You know, like my grandma died, you know, 4 years ago, just the other day. It was the four year anniversary of her death. And I'd like to think she's up in heaven. And I'd like to think that one day when I die, I'll get to see her again. But if Buddhism is real, and all we are is reincarnated after our death, I might never see her again. I mean, in my next life, I won't remember her. You know,
I feel like this is a brilliant dovetail. In between ending the God question and getting into the next question, do you mind if I actually read the egg on the recording? It's about 2.5 minutes. I think you'll see what I mean. It perfectly ties into everything you've been talking about. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, no, you go right ahead. I pretty much said everything I had to say anyway. I'm an aspiring Buddhist. That's the short and curly.
Okay. Well, so this is a short story called "The Egg" by Andy Weir. It's very publicly available, so I'm hoping I'm not breaking any sort of copyright by reading it out loud.
Probably not. We're safe on podcasts.
Hopefully not. It's very short, so I'll just get to it. You were on your way home when you died. It was a car accident. Nothing particularly remarkable, but fatal nonetheless. You left behind a wife and two children. It was a painless death. The EMTs tried their best to save you, but to no avail. Your body was so utterly shattered, you were better off, trust me. And that's when you met me. What happened? You asked. Where am I? You died, I said, matter-of-factly. No point in mincing words. There was a truck, and it was skidding. Yep, I said. I died? Yep, but don't feel bad about it. Everyone dies, I said. You looked around. There was nothingness. Just you and me. What is this place? You asked. Is this the afterlife? More or less, I said. Are you God? You asked. Yep, I replied. I'm God. My kids. My wife, you said. What about them? Will they be all right? That's what I like to see, I said. You just died, and your main concern is for your family. That's good stuff right there. You looked at me with fascination. To you, I didn't look like God. I just looked like some man, or possibly a woman. Some vague authority figure, maybe. More of a grammar school teacher than the Almighty. Don't worry, I said. They'll be fine. Your kids will remember you as perfect in every way. They didn't have time to grow contempt for you. Your wife will cry on the outside, but will be secretly relieved. To be fair, your marriage was falling apart. And if it's any consolation, she'll feel very guilty for feeling relieved. Oh, he said. So what happens now? Do I go to heaven or hell or something? Neither, I said. You'll be reincarnated. Ah, you said. So the Hindus were right. All religions are right in their own way, I said. Walk with me. You followed along as we strode through the void. Where are we going? Nowhere in particular, I said. It's just nice to walk while we talk. So what's the point, then, you asked? When I get reborn, I'll just be a blank slate, right? A baby. So all my experiences and everything I did in this life won't matter. Not so, I said. You have within you all the knowledge and experiences of all your past lives. You just don't remember them right now. I stopped walking and took you by the shoulders. Your soul is more magnificent, beautiful and gigantic than you can possibly imagine. A human mind can only contain a tiny fraction of what you are. It's like sticking your finger in a glass of water to see if it's hot or cold. You put a tiny part of yourself into the vessel, and when you bring it back out, you've gained all the experiences it had. You've been in a human for the last 48 years, so you haven't stretched out yet and felt the rest of your immense consciousness. If we hung out here for long enough, you'd start remembering everything, but there's no point in doing that between each life. How many times have I been reincarnated, then? Oh, lots. Lots and lots. As into lots of different lives, I said. This time around, you'll be a Chinese peasant girl in 540 AD. Wait, what? You stammered. You're sending me back in time? Well, I guess technically. Time, as you know, it only exists in your universe. Things are different where I come from. Where you come from, you said. Oh, sure, I explained. I come from somewhere. Somewhere else. And there are others like me. I know you'll want to know what it's like there, but honestly, you wouldn't understand. Oh, you said, a little let down. But wait, if I get reincarnated to other places in time, I could have interacted with myself at some point. Sure, happens all the time. And with both lives only aware of their own lifespan, you don't even know what's happening. So what's the point of it all? Seriously? I asked. Seriously? You're asking me for the meaning of life. Isn't that a little stereotypical? Well, it's a reasonable question, you persisted. I looked you in the eye. The meaning of life, the reason I made this whole universe, is for you to mature. You mean mankind? You want us to mature? No, just you. I made this whole universe for you. With each new life, you grow and mature and become a larger and greater intellect. Just me? What about everyone else? There is no one else, I said. In this universe, there's just you and me. You stared blankly at me. But all the people on Earth, all you, different incarnations of you. Wait, I'm everyone? Now you're getting it, I said with a congratulatory slap on the back. I'm every human being who ever lived, or whoever will live, yes. I'm Abraham Lincoln, and you're John Wilkes Booth, too, I added. I'm Hitler, you said, appalled, and you're the millions he killed. I'm Jesus, and you're everyone who followed him. You fell silent. Every time you victimized someone, I said, you were victimizing yourself. Every act of kindness you've done to yourself. Every happy and sad moment ever experienced by any human was, or will be, experienced by you. You thought for a long time. Why, you asked. Why do all this? Because someday you will become like me. Because that's what you are. You're one of my kind. You are my child. Whoa, you said, incredulous. You mean I'm a god? No, not yet. You're a fetus. You're still growing. Once you've lived every human life throughout all time, you will have grown enough to be born. So the whole universe, you said, it's just an egg, I answered. And now it's time for you to move on to your next life, and I sent you on your way. It seemed incredibly pertinent to the discussion at hand. Sorry if that took a little longer than I expected.
Oh, that was awesome. Wow, really makes a person think. And that was Andy Weir, you said, that wrote that?
Yes, it was. Yeah, I put a link in the chat.
Excellent. Yeah, Andy Weir, yeah, wrote the Martian, and I think he has a lot of things online for free, to be honest with you, because that's actually how he got his start. Was no one would buy his books, so he started putting it up on his blog, and then finally someone was like, "Hey, this should," because he got rejected, like with The Martian, like every major publisher rejected it, and then someone finally seen his blog and was like, "We should publish this." But yeah, no, that was awesome. I'm definitely gonna.
Well, I hope I didn't just commit copyright infringement.
Oh no. We're allowed to use things on podcasts as long as we're not making money off it. It's fine, which we're not. Because yeah, we do this for free. But yeah, no, that was awesome. I'm definitely gonna check that out and reread that. Mm-hmm. That was really cool.
Well, I first encountered it probably 10 years ago, and it's just something I've always reflected upon. And really thought about, you know, you have the, every interaction you have with a person is a choice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's good to think about every once in a while.
Yeah. Yeah. What else was I going to say? There was something else I was going to say before I threw it over to.
Sorry to interrupt.
No, that's fine. That's fine. I just, what happens after death, reincarnation. No, I think I must have covered everything. Richard, what are your thoughts? What happens after death?
That's something that I think about fairly regularly, and I think more so in the last year, I would say. Just as I get older in life, I think more about mortality and the eventual end. When I was much younger, I just assumed I would live forever and everything would be fine.
Yeah.
But as I got older, I think to myself, like, you know what? I should probably consider, like, what is beyond. You know, because every passing year, it gets a little bit closer. And if I'm being honest, you know, part of me just says nothing. You just die. But I think that's just a huge waste. You know, there's so much, like, potential, like, if you believe in spirits and souls. And if I could get to choose what I do afterwards, you know, going to Valhalla, you know, if I'm deemed worthy, then that would be my first choice. But then if everyone died and went somewhere, you know, either Valhalla or Helheim or somewhere similar, what happens when it just gets to be too many? You know, is Valhalla of infinite size? Is heaven of infinite size? Or a different plane where size makes no difference? Who knows?
I was going to say, if you're not talking about corporeal bodies, real estate doesn't really factor in.
Right, and that's another thing. Like, if we're just spirits, you know, sure, I guess that theoretically it could just be infinite. But I like to think that perhaps there is some merit to the thought of reincarnation. And having just heard that story, that's even more cool. And that brings a lot of things to think about. Like, I try to do my best to be a good person, not always succeeding, or try to treat people how I want to be treated and not always succeeding. But that makes sense in that, like, you know, every person I've wronged is just simply me. I've wronged myself, or I've righted myself. But at this point in time, I would say nothing without any other evidence. But who knows? It could be any of the things that we've talked about. And that's part of the cool thing about thinking about it and talking about it, is the possibilities are endless.
Yeah. Well, one explanation I've always liked was the one that Captain Picard gave Data in Where Silence Has Lease, in season 2, when Data asks, well, it wasn't Data, it was Nagilum in Data form, I guess, asking him what is death, and he gives all the different explanations. You know, we go to an Earth-like garden, or we blink into nothingness. And Data asks him, what do you believe? And then Picard says, you know, with what we know of the universe, the clockwork perfection, you know, weighing this against that, time, space, energy. You know, his explanation is that, you know, when we die, you know, we move beyond this form into another form that is beyond our comprehension right now. You know, I'm paraphrasing, but I kind of like that idea too. Like, because I really don't, you know, in the same way that I don't believe we're alone in the universe, I don't believe that we just blink into nothingness. There's so much we don't understand about the universe. I think this is one of those things that is just, like, beyond our comprehension, right, you know, right now, obviously. So, Curtis, did you have any final thoughts on what happens after death?
You know, out of all these questions, I had a bunch of prep that I wrote a couple nights ago, and this is the only question I have where I have nothing. I know that I have my preferences, but I'm kind of happy not knowing. But I will tell a quick story.
Okay.
My mother had her first heart attack at 28. She has had 3 more since then. She's lived through 4.
Oh, wow.
And during the last one, it happened in 2017, so just 4 years ago. During the last one, she died on the operating table while they were putting the stent in her. And they were able to bring her back, but she described to the doctors and later to my brothers and I what was going on in the room after she died on the table and prior to her resuscitation. And she was able to describe accurately what was going on the monitoring devices and what was happening in the room. And she said that after a few seconds of that, she was looking at this all third person. She could see herself in the room. She could see the doctors working to bring her back. And the hospital wall behind her bed started to glow brighter and brighter and brighter white light. And she said it was the warmest light that she'd ever felt, the warmest thing she'd ever felt, just washing over her, this light. And she was going. She felt herself getting, like, pulled or summoned or whatever, just needing to leave this room and just off, just go off into the whatever. But they did manage to resuscitate her, and she said that her first feeling was like, oh, man, like I was about to know, man. And I'm not here to say that that is objective reality. Brains do a lot of strange things under different circumstances. But I'm not willing to just put that down to neural phenomena.
Yeah.
The accuracy of the detail with which she was able to describe the room, and again, there are scientific explanations for this, I'm sure. I'm sure someone out there is shouting at their phone or their computer right now, whatever they're listening to this on, who knows better than I do. But to me, it seems to me more likely that there's something than that there's nothing. What that something is, I don't know. Have you ever read American Gods by Neil Gaiman?
I have not. I have it, and I think it's a show too, right?
Yeah, it's the first season on Amazon Prime Video is good. The second one doesn't follow the story, and the third one's crap. Okay. But the book is great, and there's a lady who, she passes away, and she ends up dealing with the Egyptian god that weighs the heart against a feather on a set of scales to figure out where you go. Is that Horus? It's got to be Horus. Anyway, it's because she, like... So the whole premise of the show is, like, gods gain power based on how many people believe in them. So if you believe in a god, then the god exists. So because she had heard this story as a little kid, and that's the only thing she'd ever had, but she held on to it, she got to see Horus as, like, her afterlife, and he would weigh her heart against a feather, and off she would go, based on the results of that, whatever. So, I don't know. I've always had the opinion of, like, maybe there is more than one option. Maybe everybody's right. Maybe all the Christians do go to heaven. Maybe the pagans all go to Summerland. Maybe the Vikings all go to Valhalla. I don't freaking know. But I certainly don't think there's nothing.
Well, like what you're saying, what your mom experienced, so many people have had near-death experiences. And it kind of goes back to what we were talking about, like alien abductions. Mm-hmm. You know, like maybe it's not aliens, but maybe there is something to it. You know, maybe it's something else. Just like these near-death experiences, so many people have them. There has to be something there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it's just too often to be a coincidence.
I'm not willing to write it off as nonsense.
Yeah, exactly. Same, you know, like the alien abductions, maybe it's not aliens, maybe it is. We don't know.
Our knowledge set is incomplete, and it's ridiculous to think that we know everything.
Yeah.
So certainly there's something, I think.
All right, so we'll roll into our last question here. This one's pretty simple one, I think. Will we ever leave our solar system? We already kind of have with the Voyager probes.
Absolutely.
They've moved beyond our solar system. They're now in what's considered interstellar space. I like to believe one day we will leave our solar system. I think it's something we have to do as a race. You know, like, again, getting back to Babylon 5, I remember, again, the first season, Commander Sinclair was giving an interview to this reporter, and he was talking about how it's important for mankind to leave the cradle. And by the cradle, he means Earth, you know, because we are very vulnerable here on this planet. We really are. Our sun could go nova. You know, an asteroid could hit our planet.
Our sun will go red giant,
yeah,
for that matter.
Yeah, an asteroid could hit us and wipe us out. They wiped out the dinosaurs. You know, there's climate change could wipe us out if we don't, reverse it or stall it. Because climate change is going to happen regardless. I mean, you know, not to get political, but I mean, the science suggests that we are making it faster. You know, climate change is going to happen on this planet one way or another, but, you know, we don't need to speed it along as a race. You know, like, we are vulnerable here on this planet. You know, keeping all our eggs in one basket is not wise. You know, we need to spread this out. Otherwise, you know, one day our race will be gone, and no one may never know that we were even here. If there are aliens, and they come to this planet, you know, in some distant future, and we're gone, and all evidence of us has been wiped off the face of the planet, you know, by nature, or by an asteroid, whatever, you know, I don't like that idea, that, you know, that we go to back to, you know, we go to nothing. So I think it's very important that we leave our solar system at some point in the future. The sooner the better. Because the longer
and we... And you are going to love Isaac Arthur's channel, I'm telling yeah. you. He deals with all of this, and it's like real science. You're going to love it.
I love that sort of thing. Like, like Arthur C. Clarke wrote this book. I can't remember what it was. But basically, it was just like essays where he's talking about this sort of thing. And it's... shit. I wish I had that book here. I can't remember what it's called. It's one of my favorite books. It's just a little book. And it deals with all the sort of talk, you know, and some of his theories on things that we could do. But yeah, we definitely need to get out of here. And like, I'm not saying everyone leave Earth, but I mean, we are overpopulating this planet. Like, I mean, it's going to become a severe problem for future generations. We need to find other places to go.
Well, there's other solutions that we could do, but our economic reality is getting in our way.
Yes.
There's absolutely solutions. We could sustain like 3 trillion frickin' people on this planet if yeah. we managed resources properly.
Yes. But yeah.
we don't, because we're stupid.
Yeah. we're our very nature, we're very selfish as a people. And really, it's going to take... It will
That's
take
some
time.
That's a big part of it.
But anyway, I think we really need to get out of here. You know, we need to start seeding other planets. Richard, what are your thoughts? Will we ever leave our solar system?
Yes. Simple answer, yes. Though, I think it'll take, you know, perhaps the better part of 1,000 years. Mostly because, as a planet, we don't get along.
Yeah.
But if we could harness the entire resources and the manpower of the whole planet, I think that we could do it. And Isaac Arthur actually explains, you know, how we could. We know how to build it. We just need to actually do it.
Yep.
And aside from that, humans are just insanely curious, and they just can't be stopped. You know, that's just the kind of people we are.
Yep.
You know, we're going to do it, and we're working on doing it, but we could do it faster if everybody on the planet helped out.
Yeah, agreed.
You know, we could build a Dyson Sphere. We could build... Oh, that's actually pretty monumental, but we could build, like, a Dyson's ring, at least. You know, that would be a good start.
Yeah, ring, you know, world.
The swarm is the simplest form of the... actually, the original concept behind a Dyson sphere was supposed to be a swarm creating a sphere-like shape around the star, but it got misinterpreted by science fiction. So
yeah, so anything like that. There's, you know, the concept of a Dyson sphere is really cool, but it's, you know, not... I don't know if that's even possible. But the Dyson totally Swarm.
Is. Oh, yeah. Way, no, sorry. My apologies. The Swarm, yes. Which was the original idea for the sphere. I apologize. I misunderstood.
Yeah. So that's what we should be working towards. But instead, we're, you know, not working towards a whole lot. At least a lot of us aren't. But yeah, I think we will. It may take 1,000 years, but we're going to do it.
Yep. And Curtis, your thoughts. Will we ever leave our solar system?
Well, yeah. And I'm with you. We already did. And further to your point that the Voyager, both Voyager spacecraft left into Interstellar Space, Voyager 1 on August 1st, 2012, and Voyager 2 on December 10th, 2018. Voyager 2 also successfully fired its thrusters on July 8th, 2019 to correct its course. We stretched our hand out, and we have changed something outside of our solar system using our force of will.
Mm-hmm.
That is, pardon my French, fucking incredible.
It is. Yep.
Do you understand how monumental that is to influence something that far away?
Mm-hmm.
And like, we altered something outside of the solar system. There's not something that we can't do. We just have to stop fighting over the goddamn sandbox long enough to actually do it. Yeah. And we're at a crossroads right now. We can fight about stupid shit. And I honestly think most human conflict is at its heart.
Mm-hmm.
When you think on the bigger scale, it is stupid shit. Or we can get to work. There's enough material on Earth to create so many continent-sized orbital habitats complete with biodiversity of life, capable of supporting self-sustaining systems that literally every conceivable group of people with a different set of beliefs could have their own entire continent all to themselves, where they can live by whatever the hell rules they want. We could make billions of these things just out of the material that we have on Earth, never mind the asteroid belt and the other inner planets, which are all going to be destroyed when the sun goes red giant anyway. But we have to pass the great filters first. We have the tech. We've already made something that left the solar system. If we can build something that can do that in the 70s, when our computers were so bulky they needed entire buildings just to house them, then nobody can tell me what we can't do. Mm-hmm. We already did it with inferior tech, decades inferior tech. I have more computing power in my pocket right now than the entire world had in the 70s. There's no way that we're not leaving this solar system if we really put our minds to it.
Yep.
We all got to figure out a way to stop friggin' fighting over this tiny little insignificant planet.
And it is so insane.
Sorry, that was a bit of a rant. Whew,
no,
let off some steam in that one.
But, I mean, it's absolutely true. Like, I mean, it is insignificant. You know, one hit by the right sized asteroid, and we're all dead. And it doesn't matter who controls the oil in the Middle East. Then, you know what I mean?
No, like, I want to clarify. It's the planet itself that I'm talking about being insignificant. We are not insignificant.
Yeah,
we have already had an effect on the cosmos.
Yep.
We possess consciousness. We don't know of anything else that does that. That's not from this planet.
Yep.
We need to give ourselves some goddamn credit,
mm-hmm.
figure out our place in the cosmos, and go for it. It doesn't matter who's president. It doesn't matter who owns that oil over there. We can hold on to these grievances that we've... Fine, they're legitimate. A lot of them are legitimate. I'm not disputing that. But if we could just let go and move forward...
Yep, and work together.
You know, we could. It's insane the things we could accomplish.
Oh, absolutely.
We can't even imagine.
And that's, you know, getting back to Star Trek, that's something that Gene Roddenberry used to really pound home, was the fact that, like he said, like, aliens didn't build the pyramids. We built the pyramids. Humans did. We did that.
I mean, albeit we threw human death and suffering at it until it was like, done. But yeah, we did.
It was done. It was done on the backs of slaves, but... You know, but human ingenuity is what made those pyramids. It wasn't advanced technology from an alien race. Humans did that. To piggyback onto your point, like, we are not insignificant, but our planet really is in a galactic sort of sense, unless we move beyond the solar system. And when I say that, like, we have to get beyond the solar system, because, you know, if our sun decides to go on us one day, that's it for everyone in the solar system. The nice thing is the Voyager probes are beyond the reach. Like, if our sun did go supernova,
mm-hmm.
they would survive.
We're out there, man.
Yeah. So that's sure. that's really what interstellar space means, is we're beyond, you know, the reach of any kind of cataclysm that could possibly happen in our solar system. We need to get beyond that. We need to go to other solar systems. We need to stretch forth our hand. Because, you know, like I said, like what they were saying on Battle of Five, which was J. Michael Straczynski speaking to Commander Sinclair, you know, we're vulnerable. And the longer we stay here, the more vulnerable we are. I was talking to this guy. This was years ago, guy from work. And he was talking about, I forget what happened. Like, they just launched, like, NASA launched something. And spent, I forget how many billions of dollars. And he's like, you know, there's people starving on this planet, and we're spending that kind of money to go into space for what? I'm like, you know, the more steps we take into the space, the more likely we are to get off this planet. Well, why would we want to do that? It's because we're vulnerable. Like, we could cease to exist. You know, we need to get out there, you know? You know, we need to spread our wings, you know, like, but anyway, I digress. Oh, go ahead, Curtis.
Sorry, I'll make it quick. This ties into your first question that we started the podcast with. Are we alone in the universe? Maybe we are. For all we know, we are. Don't we want to leave something? Don't we want to set a better example than what we've been doing so far? Okay, we sent out some probes. Great. We can do better. Mm-hmm. Shouldn't we do better? If we can. If we are the first, then God damn it, let's be the best too. Why not?
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, I think we could call this an episode. You know, this definitely would have been a lot longer if Ragnar was here. And I'll see how Ragnar feels. Maybe I'll do a supplemental episode with this topic where Ragnar could share his thoughts on this. But we'll see what Ragnar wants to do. All right, gentlemen, is there anywhere I can find you on the internet if I wanted to look you up for our listeners? If not, that's fine. Okay.
I say right here. Really. Still
here? Okay, excellent.
This is my home. Let's go.
Here for now, but I'm going to be probably, once I get a little more practice in, I might open a sharpening business.
Oh, nice.
And at that point, I'll probably have some more of a social media presence once again.
Nice. Co-podcaster that is normally here on Trek 1701, Ragnar the Trader. You can see what he's creating for sale at ragnarthetrader.com because he's got a lot of cool stuff out there. He's back on the, you know, going to shows and stuff. I know he's planning on coming to Edmonton. Hopefully we're not locked down again by then, because I'm really hoping to get a convention in. It's been so long.
And gentlemen, winter's coming. Get that beard going. He's got your beard products, RagnarTheTrader.com. I only use his stuff. Get it.
I wish I didn't have to be clean shaven for my job. Because actually, like when I started, because I've been on, this is my last week of vacation. So I had 3 weeks off. The first week I actually didn't shave. And actually my facial hair was growing in pretty good, you know. But it was itchy.
Nice.
It was itchy. And I was like, you know what? I got to shave it anyway. I might as well just shave it now. Because that's the thing. Like, even though I'm on vacation, I could still be called in for an emergency. So it's like, I got to kind of keep it under control. Mm-hmm.
In case you got to wear that half mask respirator.
Yeah. Well, I typically wear the full face now. Ever since I had my laser eye surgery, it's like, okay, I got to protect my eyes.
For sure, buddy. For sure.
But, for myself, if you want to check out, I got a group on Facebook called Outer Spaces. It's a group about space and space entertainment. I basically, what it is I go on other social media platforms, find out information about planets, about space and astronomy, and sometimes I'll throw the occasional Star Trek pic in there too. It's a group on Facebook. It's about outer space, pretty much. Be sure to check that out. That was, you know, one of the inspirations for this episode as well. All right. Well, on behalf of myself, Chris Lockhart, and Richard Szabo, and Curtis Holloway, my co-hosts here, I would like to thank you, dear listener, for taking the time to listen to Trek 1701. This was our The Great Space Questions discussion episode, and we will see you again next time.